When it comes to biodiversity, there's a lot to celebrate, I think, here in Wisconsin and around the world. And to take a peek underwater would reveal a whole new world. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. A bit later on, about 45 minutes or so, we'll be getting to know a dozen endangered species in our oceans. They're featured in a brand new graphic novel that aims to get kids and grown-ups interested in the future health of our oceans. First, though, we're going to take a look closer, much closer to home, and explore our Wisconsin trout streams, maybe a little about those trout streams' health as well, with our guest, Steve Bourne. Steve's been with us many times on the show, talking about a variety of issues, often talking about water quality issues. He's a professor emeritus of planning and environmental studies at UW-Madison, and he's co-author of Exploring Wisconsin's Trout Streams, The Angler's Guide. It's the second edition, and it's being released later this month. And Steve, welcome back to the show. Great to have you with us.
It's great to be back, Larry.
And, you know, I really enjoy, I remember, as a matter of fact, talking, about 10 years ago when the first edition came out, and this new edition, I like a lot. It's got some new things in it.
Yep, we had to do some updating. Actually, it was 17 years ago, Larry.
Is it that long?
Yep.
Oh, my goodness.
From when we started the first book. And we thought it was time to do a little bit of updating. The book has sold very well and been popular in Wisconsin. And it's also a great storybook of conservation victories in the state. So we wrote a essay leading into the book about changes over the last several years and why these are really the best of times now for Wisconsin trout fishing. We tried to modernize the book in terms of making it internet-friendly, all the sites, websites where there's information, and all the modern ways that people can garner information about our trout streams and trout fishing. And then we added in a whole collection of new photos and did some updates throughout the text. So it seemed like there would be a new generation of trout fishers that were ready to look at the book.
And as you mentioned just now, you say the good old days of trout fishing are now, and maybe why people are going to say, why is that?
Right. Well, it's kind of funny. An old conservation department biologist, a number of biologists in the early part of the 20th century into the mid-20th century, looked at the condition of our trout streams in Wisconsin and thought there wasn't a lot of hope for this being a great trout fishing state. Whether it was the northern rivers that had been pillaged as corridors for shipping logs downstream to the mills, or the streams in the southwestern agricultural parts of the state that had been victimized by a lot of sedimentation, shallowing, warming. It just wasn't conducive to trout. And I don't think any of the biologists at that time envisioned what would be happening in the coming half century or so. Some of it's a result of economic forces, changes in farming. Some of it's a result of Wisconsin's conservation and stewardship legacy and work by the farming community and the agencies to try to protect these vital resources. Some of it is a lot of work by nonprofit groups like Trout Unlimited and other sports clubs, local clubs throughout the state, doing habitat enhancement and trout restoration. So all these things have converged to really make this the best of times in terms of the mileage of trout streams in the state. It's gone from less than 10,000 miles in 1980 to over 13,000 miles of trout stream today, classified trout waters. There is better gear. There's now a community of fishing guides to help people into the business. There's lots of clinics and volunteer opportunities for people to learn about trout fishing. And so with these good populations, good access, high-quality waters, there's been a real interest and growth in recognizing that Wisconsin does not fly over water anymore with people traveling to the Rockies or to the east or wherever. But these are some of the prime trout fishing waters in the United States. And in fact, there's something that's been going around, Larry, for the last couple of years called the Fly Fishing Film Fest. And they featured the Heart of the Driftless as one of these things, which looked at our couple thousand miles of trout streams in the Driftless area, And they had a beat-up old rock band involved that found their peace in life by fishing the trout streams of southwestern Wisconsin. And the thing became contagious. I would get phone calls from people in San Francisco and New York saying, when can we come out and fish Wisconsin?
Oh, man, that is a great story. I have many questions to ask you, but Daniel in Wisconsin Rapids has been waiting a bit, so I want to go to him. Daniel, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. In fact, I'm on the road at the moment on my way down to the White River in Arkansas for a few days to fly fish on an annual trip, but I just wanted to comment on a couple of my favorite streams. I'm partial to the Sand County streams because that's my local region in central Wisconsin, and particularly the McCann and the Tomorrow River, one of which... one of the reasons for that is it's just got the best name of any river I've ever heard. But there are just so many good and varying and different sections on these different rivers. And I must say a lot of great work has been done on the Tomorrow by Trout Unlimited. And I'm looking forward to the Hex coming in a few weeks. And then the last one, I could go on and on about the Coulee Country and all of that, but the last one that I've recently discovered is probably a little-known river up west of Hurley by Upson, the Potato River, which I think is a gorgeous little trout stream.
Well, Daniel, what I'd like to do is get your address, send you some maps, and have you mark the holes in each of your very private streams where you've caught large trout, and then I'll give them the test. You're quite correct. Those sand country streams are wonderful streams. A lot of work has been done to protect them. They're groundwater dependent. They're spring creeks, but they don't have the high alkalinity and the production that you get in the southwestern driftless area spring creeks. But they're wonderful places to fish. And, of course, like other addicted fishermen, and I can tell you have the addiction, you're looking forward to the great hatches and the nighttime fishing of the Hex Hatch. And we might talk a little bit about that, but that's clearly an acquired taste because along with the Hex insects, the largest mayfly that hatches in the country, and the chance to bring big brown trout up looking for dinner, you also have to have a taste for mosquitoes, muskrats, bats, heat and sweat. So it really takes some time to develop that taste. But I started off doing that many years ago on the McCann. I thought it was akin to trudging through a swamp in Vietnam the first time I went, but I've become a complete addict now and spend 30 nights a year or so chasing Hex across Wisconsin.
Well, I think once you've been in a Hex frenzy, it's I think you're done for.
It certainly isn't healthy for marriages.
Thanks, Daniel. Good luck, by the way, on your trip.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate it very much. Oh, man. Marty in La Pointe has a question or a comment. Hi, Marty. Thanks for calling.
Thanks. Love the show. I am a father of three children. My boys tie flies, and they get into the fly fishing. I'm very, very proud of them for doing that. Love getting out myself. And without getting too political, I'm curious, of course, there's this mining issue going on in the north, which threatens several Class A trout streams. And I know there's a real concern about why sportsmen groups or what have you haven't really stood up to take a stance on the issue to protect some of these really beautiful, pristine waters that are home to some of these really beautiful species of trout. I'd like to just hear... A little thought on that issue, and
sure.
I can take the response off air.
All right, thank you for calling, Marty.
Okay, Marty. Well, economic activities like mining are a part of our heritage here in this state, starting with the lead mining in the southwestern part of the state. You may not remember, but in the 70s, there was a huge controversy over a large potential copper-zinc mine in the headwaters of the Wolf River. Ultimately, after many years of controversy, that mine was not built, and the Native Americans purchased that land, ending the prospect of metallic mining in the watershed there. The proposed mine that Gogebic Taconite is looking at in the Pinokies has been very controversial. I think it is fair to say that environmentalists and conservationists and anglers and Native Americans have fought a very strident battle on this. The League of Conservation Voters has been an organizing force as well as a number of other groups in the state. But at the end of the day, when the votes were taken, this is a legislature that, as they tried to do the balancing, balanced very heavily in favor of the economic activity. I'm not against mining. We all use metallic goods, and Wisconsin has this tradition of mining. But one has to think about balancing the shorter-term boom and bust cycle of mining and the limited number of jobs that are really created by that with the long-term aspects related to water quality, fisheries, recreation. I mean, we're a state with a $17 billion tourism recreation economy, and much of it relates to fishing and other outdoor sports. So protecting that base is critical. This is a story that is not yet finished. The company in question is doing testing right now. There are DNR procedures to go through, and after that, there are federal government permits that will be involved. So this is something that will be playing out over the next several years, and I'm sure it will be contested by groups that are opposed to it, and there's good reason to worry about it. In the western part of the state, the big issues there related to mining are frack mining, the so-called mining. The sandstones are Paleozoic sandstones are very pure quartz sandstones. They're perfect for using in a number of industrial applications, including as the prop that they pump into wells when they're fracking to increase production. But we've seen just a burst of activity. We've gone from less than 10 mining and processing operations a few years ago to over 120, 130 mines and processing facilities now. And places like Trempealeau County, which bear the brunt of that, are worried about the impacts. Many of them are not related to the resource. They're dust impacts and road traffic and other kinds of things. But there's also a concern about what the impacts may be on streams in the area. And so it's something that has to be carefully evaluated. And I would say this, as the public and agencies and the legislature goes through the decision-making process on very big issues like this, they should use the cautionary principle and err on the side of the resource because the damage can be irreversible.
Well, and, you know, as you think about a fish like trout, they seem to be particularly sensitive to changes in the environment, do they not?
Absolutely. It doesn't take long for a stream where there's a sedimentation problem, a loss of habitat. In the northern part of the state, beaver dams that can slow up flows and warm up water before a trout stream is no longer a trout stream. And, of course, one of the things that many people are worried about, scientists, trout anglers, conservation organizations, is the warming that we're witnessing in our rivers and streams in the state and across the nation. It turns out that since about 1950, there's been more than a 1 degree increase in Fahrenheit in temperatures in our Wisconsin trout streams. That doesn't sound like much, but that can be a fairly profound shift, particularly if a stream is near a thermal threshold in the summertime where a degree or two is the difference for a trout between life and death. And some of the climate change work that's been going on, the modeling, joint projects between the university here in Madison and elsewhere and the DNR, has used some of these computerized models and modified them to reflect impacts on Wisconsin, looking at some of their worst-case scenarios, which would be an increase of 4 to 7 degrees Fahrenheit by mid this century. That could almost be the death knell for brook trout, our only native salmonid in the state, and would have a huge impact in reducing stream mileage for brown trout. And even if you take non-extreme case, a mild case of just a degree or two increase in temperature from where we are right now going ahead into the mid-century, there could be a substantial reduction in our trout fisheries. So they're very sensitive. They're like the proverbial canary in the mine. And if you take care of the habitat and the watersheds, the fish will come along just fine.
Yeah. Steve Bourne, our guest today, Emeritus Professor of Planning and Environmental Studies at UW-Madison. He is co-author of the book Exploring Wisconsin Trout Streams, The Angler's Guide. It's in its second edition. I'm Larry Mueller. And Carl Christensen, our on-air producer today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my guest Steve Bourne. We're talking trout fishing, Wisconsin Trout Streams with Steve, who is co-author of the book, Wisconsin Trout Streams, The Angler's Guide. Very popular book. It's the first edition they started on about 17 years ago. This new edition now has many, many updates. Even if you have that first edition, I think you'd be well advised to take a look at this new edition for sure. Call us with your own questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Todd in Cross Plains, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hello, how you doing? Hello, Steve. This is Todd.
Hi, Todd.
Nice to hear you on the radio. I have a question about Black Earth Creek for you.
Okay.
I know it's one of your favorite creeks, and why do you think it really is overlooked by the anglers in the greater Madison area?
Hmm.
Well, that's funny. Todd used to run a small fly shop on the banks of the Black Earth Creek. I think you'd be hard-pressed to find anglers out there who thought it was overlooked, Todd. If anything, many of them are grousing about there's too many darn anglers here, and they're coming in from Milwaukee and Chicago to fish this challenging little spring creek. But you're right. If you really know the stream, and it's got a significant length to it, and there's been a lot of improvements along the way, you can always find plenty of water to yourself there. It's kind of an attitudinal thing. One guy's crowding is another guy's damn near wilderness experience. So Black Earth Creek is like many of the creeks that we describe in the book, well-known streams that need friends and that have fishing pressure on them. We weren't giving away any secrets. I had to smile when the first caller, Daniel, started talking about his favorite streams and then mentioned a little creek up in the north, the Potato River. Most of the time, you have to pour hot lead down people's throats to extract those kinds of secrets. And we sure didn't divulge any secret creeks. Although I'll tell you that in writing the book the first time, my co-authors and I, going through the screening and selection process, were worried that we might put undue pressure on some streams. And some people thought that streams that they fished didn't need to be recognized in any kind of publications that would draw more anglers to the stream. But I'll tell you, in these days, a stream that doesn't have a bunch of friends is a stream in trouble.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Well, one thing, though, I was just out today, and there's only two cars on the entire length of the stream.
That's because I'm trapped in a radio studio.
Thanks, Todd. Well, I tell you what, it's always been my favorite. I would hate to even venture how many trout I've caught on Black Earth Creek. And you probably, I'm sure you've caught a lot more than I have on Black Earth Creek. It's a wonderful stream.
It's sort of the gateway to the Driftless. Some spectacular habitat restoration projects have been done on that stream. There's one going on now led by a nonprofit group called the Wolf Run Association, working with Trout Unlimited and state and county agencies and other nonprofits that has helped decommission the dam in Mesomany and restore the channel to its original configuration, and we're adding miles of trout stream. And so even in heavily pressured fisheries like Black Earth, there's a wonderful fishery there. There are always new threats, however. It was only last year that the report of New Zealand mud snails, another invader that has heretofore not been found east of the Rockies, showed up in Black Earth Creek. And there's a great deal of concern now about how that might spread and what the impacts might be. It was kind of interesting, and I think we'll see this in all of our waters where we're worried about invasives of one type or another, where anglers are going to have to be careful about cleaning their gear and so forth. It's also unrealistic, though, to expect every angler coming out of a stream to put his or her gear into a microwave or freeze it for 4 days or have dedicated gear. But we're going to have to exercise some real caution if we don't want to exacerbate this problem.
Yeah. Well, now, how in the heck, people would say, how the heck did that snail wind up in Black Earth Creek from thousands of miles away?
Right. And you take a look around, and there are exotics all over. Any of you who own land in Wisconsin spend a good deal of your recreational time trying to weed out invasives. And the invasives are nasty, and they're nasty in the water. There's a new worm that's apparently showing up in some of our prairies. It's an invasive of concern. There are invasive fish that have come into the system, bugs that have come into the system. And the fact is that there's just so much travel back and forth, both in commerce and people and gear. It's pretty hard to think about stopping the spread of invasives. And there are many things that we love dearly that you could call invasives. For example, watercress is not native to this country, and we all think it's a wonderful thing to look at in the spring. Some of us are in love with brown trout here. They're invasives as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's sort of like the old Indian chiefs said to some of the legislators in Congress not too long ago. They said, you ought to think through your immigration policy carefully. We didn't.
There we go. Jeff in Warrens, Wisconsin, thank you for calling. Hello.
Hello. Yeah, I've been listening, and I'm quite grateful for somebody putting something out on the trout fisheries. I grew up in Westby, Wisconsin, and we have Timber Coulee and Spring Coulee and Rulins Coulee and all the other off branches down there. And growing up as a kid, that was Timber Coulee was where it was at. And it's kind of hard to fish it right now. There's a lot of rules and everything that have changed since they've restored the creek itself. But I just wanted to comment that when I was a kid, we used to run the ridges down there, and I was actually able to find, as a kid, springs where you were actually able to see brook trout as they were coming up into some of the off branches, and they were actually breeding.
Yep.
And to see that as a kid, I know where it's at, whether I can get access to it anymore or not. I would love to take my son there to show him, but it was so cool. It was so much fun as a kid, and now it's so political and so different that it's almost, you know, a heartache to do it sometimes. But doing it as a kid, man, I, you know, 40 years ago, 50 years ago, that was so much fun.
Oh.
Well, Jeff, you raised a couple of pretty interesting points. One has to do with the regulations. Wisconsin has one of the most modern and best sets of regulations for trout fishing in the country. They're not simple. It's a privilege to trout fish, but they're not that complicated either. You find the water, you find whether or not fish can be harvested and what the size limits are. And the DNR fishery booklet for trout fishing is just a wonderful guide on where to go for recreational opportunity. You just have to kind of make sure that you read the regulations. That shouldn't be too onerous a task, because it's such a joy, as you indicate, to get out on the streams. And incidentally, there are some people have expressed concerns in different parts of the states about how complex regulations and all the changes in life generally have made it hard to go trout fishing anymore. And yet DNR did a survey of anglers who stopped trout fishing, including people who didn't have high salience in trout fishing. They probably rather would be playing golf.
Mm-hmm.
But only about 12% said the reason they backed away from trout angling in the state was because of complex regulations. For most people, it's just a time allocation thing. They have other preferences and priorities. And things are changing in terms of who the anglers are, too. You've got three young kids. There's lots of opportunities to bring them into the fishing world. There are all kinds of clubs and people that will help do that. Try to deal with this nature attention deficit that we've got, and the kids being mesmerized by computer screens. They've got to experience the out-of-doors, and we're an urbanized population. We have different kinds of families than we had in the past. Some special efforts have to be made. The one other point I would just address is the access question. Under the state stewardship program and under the DNR's programs for access to designated trout fisheries, we've got some of the best public access in the United States. To fish these same kind of streams in Montana, you'd pay $100, $200 a day. Same thing in Pennsylvania and other places. So we have access that has been guaranteed us by laws going back a couple hundred years, a public trust there. And most private property owners in Wisconsin, particularly farmers, if you go up and ask, my experience over many decades, including now when there are more anglers and more people asking, is most people are certainly willing to let you access their land as long as you're a responsible user and close the gates and don't leave garbage behind and all that kind of common sense stuff.
Yeah,
I remember we used to be able to start at the ski jump and down in Timber Cooley, and you could go all the way to Coon Valley, and it was simple. Either you rolled over to rocks and found your larvae to fish with, or you had a can of worms, and that's what we did.
Yep. Well, I think most of us started off dunking a worm here or there.
Garden hackle.
I started a club, I think it was a sophomore in high school, called the Worm Dunkers, and that spoke to my own genetic problems, I think. But the country that you live in is some of the best trout fishing, some of the most beautiful country in the United States. And all those streams in that Coon Creek drainage are wonderful trout streams today.
Thanks again for calling, Jeff. Appreciate it very much. And to Susan from on Facebook said, Larry, I'm the daughter of a trout fisherman. I, too, love the sport. Can you tell me what the black spots are I'm finding on brookies? I fish near the Blue Hills in northern Wisconsin.
I'm not sure I can help with that. One of the problems we're having with our wild brook trout populations, though, is gill lice. And they're showing up all through the gills, and it has a potentially lethal effect on these brook trout populations. But I would defer on the black spots. I would say check with your local fishery manager, Susan. He's a biologist and knows those fish, and I'm sure we'll have an answer for you.
Yeah, it may be something. I'm sure it's probably nothing. I mean, we get them on bluegills in this area, and they're a little insect. I better not say anything either. I can see you made the right choice there, Stephen, not talking about it. But they're definitely, the DNR folks are going to have an answer for you. And thanks for that question. Or maybe somebody will call in. There may be somebody who knows about it can give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 and weigh in on that. Or another question that you might have, too. Mickey on Facebook, I like Wisconsin trout fishing, especially the southern or the southwestern part of the state. That said, it's hard to find big trout that are not planted by the DNR near bridges early in the season.
Well, what's happened in these streams, they've been so rejuvenated and the habitat is so good, the populations have skyrocketed in many of these streams. Some of these streams support 3,000 plus fish per mile, and these are kind of small streams for that. And so what you get is numbers, and the big trophy fish are really a rarity. If you catch a 20-inch brown, and they're out there, there just aren't many of them. And it's like looking at any population curve. By the time you get to the 7 or 8 year old brown trout in a stream, they're the lunkers that anglers dream about. There aren't many of them. And when you find one, you want to target it and work over that kind of fish. The big fish that are dumped in, if you will, by the DNR are broodstock, both rainbows and occasionally browns that are no longer useful for them in their hatchery reproduction programs. And to add a little bit more value to the fishing experience for anglers, they do indeed put some of these big fish in at bridges and other accessible points. But I have to say, I've seen many anglers looking very wide-eyed, having caught a bunch of 10 and 12-inch brown trout, and suddenly they're tied up to what they think is a steelhead that showed up in their stream, and they land a 22-inch rainbow, and for them it's a trophy. The fishery biologist who stocked them may be smiling, thinking it wasn't an aquarium a couple days earlier. Yeah. But it does provide recreational angling experience, and as these broodstock fish are in the stream for a little while, they don't last too long, they begin to acclimate to wild conditions, and they eat all the kinds of bugs and lures and so forth that anglers use. So it's one more dimension of our fishing.
We have a Facebook, on Facebook, And then I'm not sure if you've got your the screens on over on your side or not. Well, that's too bad because Kim sent us a shot of the sun with one of many, many trout, and it is a dandy. I wish you could see it.
I can see it.
Ah, there you go. you know, an angler always likes to show that picture. I have photos, and I've got some dandies.
It's almost out of control these days, Larry, with social networking and cell phones. Somebody catches a trophy on the stream, and the picture of it is up on their Facebook page 5 seconds later. And so we're all sharing these results. There are lots of opportunities in Wisconsin to catch these great big trophy fish, and I'm speaking of the 800 or 900 miles of Great Lakes shoreline, where there's a chance here for fishing for salmon and steelhead, which are rainbow trout, and there the opportunities are great, and that whole thing has been built on a stocking program led by the DNR.
Jimmy in Portage has something. Jim, hi, thanks for calling.
I'm glad to be talking with you. I appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, what's on your mind?
Well, I wanted to agree with you with on the regulations that the DNR has put out for trout fishing. It's helped the streams over the years. I read your first book, and I really liked it. I went off exploring a lot of those waters just to see how the fishing is. And I've kept my logbook since 1998 of all my fishing and everybody that fished with me. I've logged over 10,000 trout since 1998 with my friends. And fished 102 streams, and a lot of those we've gotten trout well over 20 inches. I used to fish the West Fork of the Kickapoo around Avalanche constantly back in the 80s, and I still try to get there as much as I can today.
That's a great fishery, Jimmy. That a lot of work was done on the Kickapoo and tributaries there by the West Fork Sports Club and Trout Unlimited, the county, the state, and it's a wonderful fishery. And it's also one of the amazing stories in Wisconsin because as agricultural land use changed, partly the economy, partly conservation, cropping practices, the Kickapoo, which was a big old warm stream, became a cold water stream. And the main branch of the Kickapoo has a very large population of very nice trout, including some real monsters. And in the fall, when the brown trout start their spawning run, you can see them moving up streams like the West Fork, as long as they're not impeded, and be shocked to see the number of big fish in very small creeks. And it's interesting to hear you logging friends and fish and times. I think what we all wind up logging, though, is the memories with friends and the special times of field. They kind of shape our lives.
Yeah, absolutely. Jimmy, thank you so much for calling. I appreciate your call. So he's a veteran, and Todd from Winona, Minnesota is maybe on the other end of the scale. Todd, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. So I'm a person who fishes a lot already, but not fly fishing, and I want to start. And I happen to see an article in a publication I have great respect for, is Minnesota Outdoor News. Mm-hmm. And it was pitched to beginners, and I was shocked to learn from the author that as a beginner, you have to spend about $500 to $600 to have the gear necessary to fly fish. And he was stressing that this was the low end of the scale, $100 to $200 for a rod, another $100 to $200 for a pair of polarized sunglasses, then there's the reel is not much, then there's the line, waders, and I thought, that just can't be right. There's a lot of people who fly fish who must have gear that costs less than that, so I want to hear about it.
Absolutely. Todd, you can spend an enormous amount and be one of the billionaires who wants to have a whole bunch of $5,000 bamboo rods and $800 waders and so forth. That doesn't sound like the hallmark of Wisconsin trout fishing, though, does it? Or Minnesota or northeastern Iowa, all of which are wonderful trout venues. You can get in. There's several ways to do this. Almost all the major stores and manufacturers have entry-level kits, which will get you the whole kit and caboodle, rod, reel, lines, leaders, maybe a little pack of flies for under $200, $150. Places like Cabela's and Gander Mountain and many others have got even lower-level, entry-level kits that you can get. You can get cheap pairs of waders. You don't have to start with the very best stuff and a pretty simple little vest. You don't have to spend $200 on polarized glasses. I have, and I've lost them in rapids a week later, so now I go with a cheaper variety. But good eyeglasses are important, polarized glasses in trout fishing. Altogether, it might cost you, if you bought all new things, $300 or $400, and you could probably get into it. But there's lots of opportunities to buy used equipment. All these sports clubs and TU chapters, and including in Minnesota, have fundraising events where people are selling off their old gear for bargain basement prices and love to see new people get into the sport. And that's the way to do it. So it can be low-end or high-end, whatever you want. But put it in perspective. If it costs a few $100 as an entry to get into the sport, if you wanted to get into tennis, you'll spend $150 on a racket. If you want to play golf, you'll spend a heck of a lot more on a set of golf clubs. There is a sort of an entry fee to do something. You have to want to do it, but there are lots of ways to do it, reasonably priced. You don't have to have everything to start with. And once you get into it, then you'll start figuring out how you might allocate a little bit more of your few dollars towards something you love so much.
One of the things that you might want to consider is taking a look at Exploring Wisconsin Trout Streams. The book that Steve Boren has co-written, because it's really, I think for the beginner, it's a great book, but it's also, frankly, it's also a good book for the person who's been out trout fishing a lot. But I think for the beginner, certainly there's a lot of good information in here.
Yeah, I think to get started, and most of us didn't start as fly fishermen, so you start off fishing worms, and then you're spinning and catch a ton of trout on little spinners and Rapalas and so forth. But there is something elegant about the fly fishing part of it, and as one of the callers indicated earlier, where his sons was busy tying flies, you make your own bait, you have to know something about the ecology of the stream, you're into the rhythm of the river. It becomes a pretty fulfilling experience in that regard.
Yeah,
we tried to capture it in the book by talking about Wisconsin's great legacy in science, in literature, in some of the top trout fishing people in the country. And there's a lot more to it than simply going out and pulling on the lips of a trout.
Yeah, that's for sure. Todd, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Steve, that's perfect place to end. Thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. We've got your book is, it's Exploring Wisconsin Trout Streams. It's the second edition. The first edition sold very, very well. This is a much updated edition from the University of Wisconsin Press. Steve Borens, Jeff Mayers, Andy Morton, and Bill Sonzoni, the authors of the book. And I think there's something in here for everyone, and frankly, even if you don't fish, to be perfectly honest.
Right. If you're just interested in Wisconsin's water resources and streams and history, it's a rich trip through all of that, and I can't think of a more spiritual place to be than a trout stream.
I think you're right. Thank you very much. Steve Boren, I bet he's back. I'm sure he'll be back with us. Maybe he'll be talking about trout fishing again, or maybe he'll be talking about water quality, or maybe we'll be taking a look at mining issues and its effect on water. You never know with Steve. Steve Boren, Emeritus Professor of Planning and Environmental Studies at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Well, coming up, we're going to go from the trout streams to the ocean, to the wild ocean. That's the title of the book by Matt Dambicki. It's called Wild Ocean, Sharks, Whales, Rays, and Other Endangered Sea Creatures. That coming up next on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.